T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by American Hip Institute.
Peter King did, or somebody, about, well, we got all these draft picks. This is a big year for Justin Fields. That kind of, not didn't surprise me, but he's talking about being candid. He's saying, hey, we're going to try to help Justin as much as we can, and we're going to probably be more balanced on offense than what we've been. But Justin's got to do his end of the, he's got to hold up his end of the bargain, and he's got to become a little better passer in our minds, or whatever it is. So I thought that was pretty candid also.
Bears. Dave, a little under the weather this morning?
It sounded like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Protect him at all costs.
Yes.
It's my guy right there. I love Wani. I truly do. And this version of him, kind of Uncle Wani.
This is, Grandpa. He's got a bunch of grandkids now.
But I'm not going to call him. Uncle is kind of a sign of respect. Uncle, auntie. That's the hey auntie thing, mm-hmm. even though it was technically, he actually was.
Hey auntie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually was her nephew, but it's a sign of respect. And it, I love that it's something that's kind of come over from Africa, and now the black community here is starting to, because I'm in uncle stage now. I'm, hey, well, this is what happens.
Uncle Ruckus.
I'm not, definitely not Uncle Ruckus. My God. It makes me sad that they never came back with that show, and now you can't, so that's too bad.
Why, would we canceled in Florida?
No, because John Witherspoon is dead.
Well,
so
you can replace a voice actor.
I don't know if you're going to be able to replace an actor that Magruder picked specifically to play Grandpa, but... You know how many people didn't realize that that was Regina King playing Huey and Riley? They didn't realize it was, one, a woman, and two, it was that woman doing the voices on Boondocks. But anyway, I digress. What was I talking about?
Ryan Poles.
Oh, Ryan Poles and his openness. He really likes Peter King. That is clear from... The Football Monday Morning in America column. There's a lot of stuff in here about how they went about trying to do their thing and how they built up their offseason. I am flabbergasted by how open Ryan Poles is being with the national media about not only how the trade came together. I would expect that. This is what we worked on. These are the things they were looking for. These are the things that we were looking for. We found middle ground. Everyone ends up looking good in that scenario. The other stuff, other people don't end up looking good.
Well, the question, we have to sort of pull back. And usually when somebody's being this forthcoming or actually deviating from what's considered to be general managerial behavioral norms... It's easy to say, well, he's playing four-dimensional chess. He's doing this for a reason. And when I start doing cost-benefit analysis of that, I don't want to go old school, but when you're talking about high-level negotiations where a lot of your counterparts are more fearful, an interview like this will give pause the next time someone picks up the phone. Will it not?
Yes.
The next time someone has a conversation, like, is Peter King going to, like, maybe say, hey, Ryan, let's talk about this, but don't talk to Peter King about this conversation we're about to have, please. Can we make, just make sure, like, there's a trust issue here where some of this stuff is presumed. And I, believe me, I love it. I think it's great for fans. I will always,
I love it. I think it's great for us.
No question. I just also know the way his counterparts think and the way the group of executives tend to think and what they tend to fear, and what how this may stifle open communication if they're worried about this coming to the fore.
Look, we had talked a lot about lying season and polls playing poker and all this stuff leading up to the trade happening. I had a former NFL executive reach out to me and go, here's the thing, Lawrence. He isn't lying. He's honest to a fault. And I just wonder if this is an extension of that, where Poles hasn't developed or maybe can't develop the lying gene. That maybe he's incapable of it. But I don't know if I should take what was said to Albert Breer or to Peter King as him taking a victory lap, or him honestly saying this is how the process works.
So what would be the downside if it's an episode of Liar Liar, a new version of it, a sequel, and he's actually incapable of lying, theoretically here, how would that hurt him?
It would hurt him for the way that you said.
But it would also mean that somebody could deal with him very honestly.
Or dishonestly.
Well, but you...
They could set him up.
They could try to take advantage of him, perhaps. I'm trying to sort of game this out. It's like the logic problem. Like, if one person always lies and one person always tells the truth, what's the question? Which question would you ask of whom to determine the truth of something? That kind of thing. Like, they're logic games here. But the idea of the always honest general manager in football is certainly an interesting one.
Yes, because we're not used to it. The NFL is filled with people peeking around corners. Everyone's terrified that some piece of information is going to get out of their building and into the mainstream. And then if it gets into the mainstream, then that means it's probably going to get into some other football facility, and people are going to know what they're going to do. And Ryan Poles has just been like, let me show you how the sausage is made. This is what we did, and this is why we're really happy that we were able to do this. This is what we were looking for, and there were places that we were talking to that were not as hot about this as other places. Yeah, that
you know
we
what else
to?
Would have been cool? We could have maybe done this, and that would have been awesome.
Right. And as I've said before, if I were Jim Irsay and I read this morning, I have it printed out in big, bold print, and I ask Chris to come to my office, and I go, hey, what's true in here?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going, man?
What's true
in here?
You got
a minute?
Because I need to ask you some questions about how we're still stuck with the number four pick. How we might end up with the fourth best quarterback in this draft when you had a chance to jump ahead of everybody.
Fired up.
Hey, Clinton. How's it going, bud?
I just,
what are we doing, man?
What's going on, man? It really is cool. This is some of the stuff.
Or he's totally lying.
That Poles is totally lying?
Making it all up.
I mean, that would be even better. But some of it does check out, like how you ended up with the trade. But if you're lying, if he's lying, that makes things worse. Because that's you being... that's.
I'm just saying that.
I know, but let's game it out. If you're lying about the other GMs, they're never going to want to work with you again. And you would need a reason to be lying about them. And maybe him and Chris Ballard aren't as tight. And he's like, let me set you up to get fired after all of this stuff. I think that he's telling the truth. And that's the beautiful conundrum of lying season. Now enters a guy that seemingly is willing to tell the truth about everything. And not only is he telling the truth, he's not telling you the truth on background. he's not telling you the truth and saying this is just between you and I. He's saying it to Peter bleeping King. And it's a lead item. The Bears have been a lead item for Peter King in what, three of the last four football mornings in America?
I will say, though, the old school beat guy in me, and I know this is the modern trend now, I wish it were locally reported rather than nationally.
I do too, and I wonder if those things will start to happen, but it also kind of feels like Poles enjoys the Bears being up front, and that could be an edict from his new boss too.
Maybe, but if you're going to be the honest guy, get the beat media in there and have one of those sessions with him. Or just be available. Like when in Bourbonnais or Platteville, they would have the one night in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They let fans come in and they do a thing in the stadium. And who, Jerry Angelo or Mark Hatley would be on the sideline. He'd stand there and talk to him. Stand there talking to practice.
Yeah, but Dan, those conversations you were never making public. That was stuff that they were giving to you that you would have in the back of your head while you were watching games. This is completely different. This is on the record. I am printing this bleep. It is going up top in my column. That's what's this isn't you run into a guy in a hallway or you're out at a restaurant and you see Jerry Angelo, you say hello, he says sit down. Want to talk to you about a couple of things. That's not what this is.
Yeah, my favorite is the time a coach called me and said, "Hey, you want to sound smart?"
Yes.
I said, I sure do. He said, "You might want to speculate that we're about to trade somebody with a real big name."
Oh.
And I said, "Would I sound smart if that name were..." He was like, "Yeah, you might." I said, "Okay, thanks. Bye."
So that you know, like, that you're not in the dark on what we're talking about, these are some of the things that were said, and this is some of the stuff that was written by Peter King inside of him having an interview with Ryan Poles. He writes, "After a conversation with Bears GM Ryan Poles the other night, it sounds like the trade was almost the trade. Poles told me he had significant discussion with Houston at number two that could have him trade down twice in the top 10 with both the Texans and the Panthers. He wouldn't be specific on what broke down." Screen refresh, sorry. "But he did say, quote, I thought there was an opportunity to do something historically pretty cool with a trade from 1 to 2 and 2 to 9. That had potential to add more draft capital this year, and then the possibility that you're sitting on 3 ones in the following year. That had my attention, but my gut told me to trigger on it now. At the combine, I thought those quarterbacks did an outstanding job in their interview process. A lot of teams felt really good about some of those guys. But as you get further away from the combine, maybe there's a bad pro day or something that turns teams off." Close quote.
Hmm.
King continues to write, "My sense is that Poles is close to Carolina's GM Scott Fitterer from years of road scouting and personnel conversations, and he could get a read on exactly what Carolina would do and what it wouldn't." Now, let's play Reporter 101 on this. That line, that was something that was said to him on background.
Yeah.
By Poles.
Yeah. That's clearly, he said, you know, well, he, Scott and I are,
we're tight.
We can talk like that.
And then Poles goes on the record and says, "Scott and I have a pretty good relationship being around each other on the road. I think that played a big part of it. And trust, he wanted to get it done. He was clear with his intentions." The stuff about Justin Fields in here and how they talk with Justin Fields.
You know what this reminds me of a little bit?
It's fascinating.
You know what this reminds me a little bit of? One of my best friends for years was the head of international real estate for a big investment banking firm. And he was always, every weekend he'd be in a different country, and he did land acquisitions in Africa and Europe and Asia. And he always said his favorite people to negotiate with were the Germans, and his least favorite people to negotiate with were the British.
Okay.
He was living in London at the time.
What was his reasoning?
He said because the Germans, He said they're brusque. They're not always nice, but they say what they mean. And they mean what they say in negotiations. There's never a hiding of the ball. And he said, when you're negotiating high-level things with British business people, it's all about what's not said. And you have to interpret what they actually want to do. And it's not all trying to fool you. It's just about nuance and this sort of rhetorical dance that goes on that he just found incredibly frustrating. That he just said, look, if we're going to do a deal, let's actually do this. And when he starts talking about it, when Poles is talking about relationships and trust, it sounds like the ability to have an honest-to-God negotiation and not play silly games. And some people are better at that than others.
I agree.
People aren't wired to do it.
I agree. And that's what my intel has been on Poles, that he's not comfortable playing the lying game. Like, he's not comfortable with it. He would rather be up front and then see what happens. But he hasn't experienced consequences of that yet. So what happens if you do experience some of those consequences where people are like, I don't trust that guy because that guy's too honest? Because you know that there's someone in the NFL thinking that right now.
Yeah, he's not one of us.
This is not how we do
That's
business.
What I mean. It goes against the behavioral norms of his counterparts. Secretive and quiet and take care of each other and help each other. Yeah, we got to keep our phony baloney jobs. You know, that's what it is. And he may not, maybe he's just not wired the same.
It sure seems like it, doesn't it? It seems like we're seeing a different type of GM.
Different type of thought process.
But remember, this is only his second year. He's only 37 years old. There's a lot of pressure. And maybe that's some of this too. Now that he got the deal done, he could be like, man, this process of us trading this pick was really something. And we had so many conversations and we were thinking about doing this and 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 this. And then we talked with this team and they weren't really feeling it. And so we talked to another team and then we got what we wanted. Him explaining how the DJ Moore thing was a sweetener for the deal and why it was important for him to get a blue chip player back because he was moving so far back in the draft. All of that stuff, it opens, I think where you would be afraid is it allows people to get a read on what your strategy is. And if they have a read on your strategy, if you're not holding pocket aces, if you end up in a negotiation where you aren't the overdog, how does that affect you? And what type of deal will you then end up getting? It's really worthy of discussion and study. I hope that he keeps doing it. Like, I don't want this to sound like I'm criticizing him, because I'm not. I just think that it's really interesting. And I want to see how it continues to play out, especially when the Bears aren't the people controlling the draft or free agency because they have the best hand.
Sahadev Sharma is waiting in the wings to talk Cubs with us, so do not go anywhere. You have Sports Radio 670, The Score.
What's up, man?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
bursting at homes. Middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. An Odyssey Station.
It's definitely getting better. My fastball command is getting better. My slider command is getting better, but it's just still not where I want it to be. But for the most part, can't complain with the throwing strikes. I think that's where I've done a really good job up till the last two innings.
Scrub that man down because he is filthy. That is Hayden Wesneski. Here to talk about the Chicago Cubs is Sahadev Sharma. He is on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma, the Cubs beat writer at The Athletic. Joins us, as always, on the Score Hotline. It's brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Why is Illinois basketball so disappointing?
Oh, geez. You're trying to get me sad from the start here. I don't know. Was a team kind of thrown together? They lost their point guard almost immediately and relied on people that just, you know, weren't ready to take over the way they needed them to. And, you know, some of it's on Underwood, some of it's on the players. All of it leads to frustration for the fans, I think.
How do you feel about Brad Underwood is going forward representing and leading this Illini team?
Yeah, I think I want to see more in the tournament. I get that. But I also know what the end of Weber and all of Gross was like. And this Underwood doesn't compare to those guys. He's a pretty darn good recruiter. And I just want to see him put together the team properly and really have that point guard and have some guys stick around for more than a year or two and see what that looks like. And then I'm ready to say, like, if he's still losing in the first or second round every year, then I can understand the concerns. But right now it's going to be really hard to find someone to do what he's doing better. That's just the reality of the situation. So I don't know if it's Big Ten basketball doesn't work well in March. I don't know if it's all on Underwood or what, but I'm confident that he can put together something better than what we saw this year, because I know he can recruit, and that just wasn't the case for the previous two head coaches.
Yeah, it might be interesting to see what he does in the Big 12 or like the SEC, maybe.
Interesting. I also think if he had John Gross next to him, helping him during games, and where Underwood can handle all the recruiting and all of that, but when the actual game starts, if John Gross's ability to see what's occurring in front of him were helping Illinois, I think it would be ideal.
Yeah, I think he's had some assistants like that in the past. I'm not sure if they're as intense with the in-game coaching and adjustments as they were previously. And, you know, I don't know if that's on Chester Frazier and Tim Anderson or what, but those guys can recruit like no other. So we'll see. It's frustrating. I know that. It's supposed to be my outlet during the off season, and it doesn't turn out to be the most constructive way to enjoy my fandom.
Yeah, but overall, it seems like it's been a pretty normal camp for the Cubs. Like, almost boring. Like, I'm writing a piece for the Sun-Times about how boring camps have been, and I mean that in a very positive way. So what's interesting down there in Mesa?
So there's a couple things that have popped up that are slightly concerning to me, and some of this stuff come opening day or whenever these guys are out there could go away immediately, right? Like, Justin Steele just doesn't look right. He looked uncomfortable the last time he pitched a couple days ago, and he told us he felt like he was, you know, like throwing in water, like felt like all day, even before he was on the mound, he said he felt off. That could just be like the doldrums of spring, and like guys go through this. I'd feel more confident if he were a veteran and this were happening, because I think, you know, once every other year, John Lester would like look terrible for 2 weeks in spring and then just come out there and be John Lester, right? Justin Steele doesn't have that track record. So I'm a little bit like, I want to see how this looks come April. Keegan Thompson looks completely like a different pitcher. Like, if he hadn't had the season he had last year, I'd be like, yeah, this guy's going to the minors. There's no doubt about it, because he's throwing 91, and that doesn't work with what he does. Like, he can't throw 91 and be the guy he was last year. He was 94, 95 consistently last year. Sometimes when he was in those short bursts, he could hit 96, 97. And this is a different pitcher if he's sitting 91. He touched 92 once last outing. He hasn't gone over an inning yet. Those types of things stand out to me. And the other thing, and this is the thing I'm least concerned about, but it's a little weird. Dansby Swanson is just swinging and missing a ton in the zone. He's really late, and that's purely timing. So that's the one that concerns me the least, because timing comes. You know, these guys are veterans. The timing can be off. He's not hurt. The mechanics aren't screwed up. It's not like he's a bad player. We know what he can do. So the timing will come there. It's just you want to see something click before spring training. But again, like I've seen this 1,000 times. Guys look awful in the spring. Then the rail games start, and then it was like none of that happened. They just look great. So in order of concern, I'd say Keegan Thompson's at the top of my list. But, yeah, it's been – I would say as far as injuries and all those things, I'm not too concerned about this camp.
It's interesting because we had a conversation with Jed last week, and I asked him about Dansby, and his response was very, I thought, telling. If you heard him – you knew that Dansby was having a bad spring. He's like, oh, well, he's just preparing himself for the season, and he's taking his time and all of that stuff. When do you think it would be something that you would go, oh, this is not a great thing that's happening with Dansby?
Well, talking to the players, they're talking about, like, right now after this off day on Monday was kind of looked at as like flip the calendar and like turn it on type thing. Now we're really going all, it's not like tweaking mechanics or I'm looking for pitches only here. I'm only going to swing at this, or, you know, I'm messing with this pitch on the mound and trying to, you know, really hone in on my changeup. It's actually like, okay, now it's really go time and build up for the season and be ready to go come opening day. So yeah, you'd like to see them turn the page now, but for me, I'm not going to get bent out of shape about anything that happens results wise in spring training. Like I said, like if a guy's velocity is down or if a guy looks like he's playing hurt or something like that, that's concerning. But like other than that, I'm not going to freak out about Dansby Swanson striking out a lot in spring training. So until this goes into the regular season, that's when I start caring. Like if the month of April is just awful, it's like, what's going on here with Dansby Swanson, right? But I'm not going to worry about it in March.
I kept reading about how many Cubs pitchers decided to develop a sweeping slider, whether it's changing arm angle or grip or getting that kind of action. Now, anecdotally, I don't need to be told that is a difficult pitch to hit. It just is. I also know that Craig Breslow and Tommy Hotovy and these guys are not going to urge this kind of disruption without data. Have you asked them to see it? Like, do you know exactly what is informing the proselytizing about the sweeping slider?
Yeah, it's so some of it is the type of pitches they already throw. Some of it is, you know, their arm angle and how they release it, like how they know they can manipulate the ball. They're not just going to every pitcher and saying, you throw a sweeping slider. They do pick and choose, and it has to be the right type of pitcher. It's just a really good pitch that isn't that hard to – it's hard to master, but it's not impossible to throw, because if you throw a curveball and know how to get on top of a curveball, it's a similar thought process. But it just – obviously it moves very differently than a curveball, but that's the thought process. And it clicks for a lot of guys that throw curveballs. There's also been some recent studies that show, and of course, a team like the Rays were ahead on this, but guys that throw the gyro slider, if you add the sweeping slider to your arsenal, it's a really good 1-2 punch. It's one of the most effective sequence pitches as far as getting swings and misses. And I talked to a couple guys about that. Julian Merriweather has been really effective this spring because he added a sweeper, but he's kept his old slider. Michael Fulmer's kind of adjusted his slider to be more cuttery, and he's added that with his sweeper, and he's looked great this spring. So they do have guys that they say, with this arsenal, maybe we tweak one or two things with the current arsenal and then add the sweeper.
Dan and I were having a conversation after we talked with Jed, actually, about Nico Horner and trying to figure out his value. So help us out, because you're on the ground. You've talked about this with Nico and other people in his orbit. Going forward, considering how the rule changes will increase the value of a player like Nico on the field because he's a shortstop playing second base, do you think that changes the way that agents and teams are going to have to negotiate what is the price of a second baseman going forward?
Yeah, that's really fascinating to me, just understanding what his value is when you're talking about contracts and stuff like that, right? Like his value to the team, I think, is tremendous. Like he's a guy that was billed as like this great makeup, hard worker, the equivalent of a gym rat for baseball. So baseball rat, whatever you want to call it. He has his head on straight. Like you talk to him, he's a genuine guy, really seems to, cliche, but he gets it. What's his value as far as an extension? Do you have to adjust how you look at second baseman? I think that's a great question, Lawrence. I don't know. I think we have to see how teams are going to handle this, how agents are going to handle it, because we are looking at the value of a second baseman a little different than we did before these rule changes, because you have to be, if you want to be a good defender at second base, you're going to have to be kind of like have those shortstop skills. And we know he has that. So I think it's interesting. I've thought that he kind of has to capitalize on the fact that he's coming off a shortstop season, and it would be in his best interest to sign an extension now. Talking to more people about that, I don't think that's the case. I think he can still get a similar value and even more, because I think he's starting to tap into a little more power. He may be a better offensive player than originally thought. Not some like middle of the order power hitter. I'm just saying like 15 homers isn't out of the question for him. When I used to think like getting to double digits, which I believe he did last year, would be the ceiling and kind of a surprise. But he showed that he can do that. And he's getting the ball in the air more. He's always made hard contact. So his value, Tim Britton over at The Athletic, I think, comped him to J.P. Crawford. I think he's going to get, if they get this extension done at some point, either this offseason or next, it's going to be in that range and a little bit more.
Sahada, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That's Sahada of Sharma.
Our guy. And when we talk Cubs spring training on The Score, it's sponsored by Sloan, official water efficiency partner of your Chicago Cubs.
We've got some positive White Sox injury news and some uncertain White Sox injury news.
And some familiar White Sox injury news.
And also a note that follows up our John Smoltz conversation that is just perfect.
That's next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
In the air, shallow left field. Moncada's out. Santos is on. It's Santos making the catch, and Moncada peeling out of the way at the last moment, but yet to get up. Moncada's still down. And they're calling out the training staff to come take a look at Yoan Moncada.
Hey. Well, the good news is they initially had reported concussion, or at least Bob Nightingale did, and I guess it's not a concussion. It was a bruised rib or a bruised something, so he's more okay than not. That was courtesy FS1.
Right, more okay in real life than not. Maybe not more okay for baseball than not.
Well, let's just give it a little time, because we knew with the Seiya Suzuki experience, it's a mild strain.
Right.
It's a minor strain. And then you find out, well, he might miss a month of the season or whatever it is.
Right.
So.
But I'm happy that it's not a concussion for Yoan.
Sure.
You'd much rather have it be a rib injury than a head injury for the person. For the baseball player.
Well, head injury is still bad for a baseball player. You can have vision issues and all that.
I agree. Yeah. But one of them is probably a little bit more likely to only keep you out a little bit versus one could be a lingering thing.
Now, Eloy Jimenez had cramping. He left with a trainer yesterday, and we all went, Well, James Fegan, just a little bit ago, said Pedro Grifol said Eloy Jimenez cramped up while sitting on the bench yesterday.
I thought it was him running to first base.
Not after running out of grounder. It's sort of maybe post hoc ergo propter hoc. Maybe he did run to first base, but he actually was cramping after sitting on the bench. I don't know. He said Jimenez has already run, and he's worked out today without issue.
They got him some potato chips and some bananas and some Gatorade. And
vitamins.
Good. They have a whole thing of vitamins because last year someone needed vitamins.
And he said he was scheduled to be off against the Brewers ahead of time, but he will play tomorrow.
Okay, that's good news.
Fine.
Now do Andrew Vaughn.
I don't have the latest, but I know that he had soreness.
Back soreness. Yes. You know what I'm wondering about Vaughn? And I'm not a doctor, nor am I a trainer. But I'm wondering if there's a hamstring issue there.
Just overall core tightness kind of thing?
Mm-hmm, because the leg being tired has kind of been a theme with him. And you talk about the back, and I know that I've had some back issues because I haven't been able to do the Adam Archuleta and build myself some hamstrings. So I just wonder if that's like a thing with Andrew Vaughn.
No, it's a good question.
There's
stretch him out a little bit, do a little yoga.
Yeah, he might. He's kind of boxy, you know, big slugger type body on him.
Carlos Quentin.
I think he's less, he's more meaty than Carlos Quentin, because you know Quentin was just a muscle. He was just one muscle with a bat in his hand,
blocky.
But Andrew, I'm just saying like body type, not how the body is actually shaped. Like I think he's a little blocky, so you got to get him some hamstrings. Get Adam Archuleta out of the booth. Say, hey, how can you create some hamstrings? Well, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this. And then what's going to happen is I'm going to get beat all the time.
And then that guy's going to be behind me again.
Over the top.
I don't know how he got there, but he's there again. I get most of them, but I missed him.
Now come sit over here next to me.
Well, that was a bad one, man. That's
super sweet guy.
I know. He's pretty good at his job. But
yeah. Seeing him at the end was not fun at all.
Real bad.
There is some White Sox WBC news, too, because in trying to keep one of the very most important White Sox healthy, Pedro Grifol has said, my guy's not pitching tonight.
Oh, although he said he was available to. Maybe to close?
Yeah, let's hear what Lance Lynn had to say about all of this.
Hey, Lance, I'm assuming, because you threw the other night, you're done, right, with the WBC? You're done?
I asked the White Sox if I could close or something like that tomorrow, and they were like, absolutely not. So, I think, is you supposedly set up to throw the championship game?
No,
Yamamoto.
Yamamoto,
but no. Ohtani might close out the game. Angels are letting him close things out, apparently.
Well, yeah. If he's slated to be able to close, then I'm going to have to get on a phone with Rick today and see if I can.
So that's the Foul Territory podcast, and that's them talking with Lance Lynn. So if you were thinking Lance Lynn will come in and save the day, Johnny Allstaff is out there for Team USA and everyone's available. According to Pedro Grifol, he ain't available.
Or Rick Hahn.
Or Rick Hahn.
When he just said the White Sox, we don't know exactly who they took. It might have been Kenny. We don't know who's in charge. Who is the White Sox? We have no idea.
I'm probably going to ride with it being Pedro on this one. But if it is Rick or Kenny, I second that emotion.
So I want to thank the texter that sent us a link to a couple of tweets here after our John Smoltz discussion, who was just more than happy to pile on with data. Jarrett Seidler of Baseball Prospectus noted this on March 13th.
Okay.
Smoltz just droned about how the USA exit velocities in this inning weren't any good, but they just knew how to hit. And just holy F this guy. He then has a list of the actual exit velocities of the hits in the inning.
I'd be interested.
Of 107.6, 109.5, 102.6, 98.3, and 97.2.
Those are pretty good exit velocities.
And then responding to that tweet, Jeremy Machino, data analyst and pitching coach, the creator of Pitch Profiler. He said, I love to rip on Smoltz because he rightfully deserves it. So here's this. I used to provide Smoltz and his broadcasts with data. Smoltz's group never requested StatCast data because he didn't understand it. He didn't understand it because he always said it was wrong. It's StatCast data. It's just measurements. It's not even metrics.
And then he grandstanded.
And it's something that Major League Baseball created to help you.
Yeah, when you heard Carlos Correa saying, what are you trying to do? I'm trying to get the highest possible exit velocity off the barrel of my bat.
How hard is that to understand?
It's called hitting the ball. They just know how to hit.
It's hitting the ball harder.
Yes.
Like, that isn't. Doesn't that fit into the profile of any old school baseball man to say, what does that guy do? He hits the ball hard.
Yes.
You know when he's in the batting cage.
That makes a different sound coming off his bat. Let's see now we can measure it.
This just quantifies it. Yes. Like, why are they so scared?
I don't know.
Yeah,
they just know how to hit.
The crazy part about this is as baseball has one foot stuck in its tradition and the other foot leaning towards the future, look at all the proprietary measurements that Major League Baseball and BAMTech have created. They've gone above and beyond so much that they are coveted by non-sports places. That's why Disney acquired BAMTech for billions of dollars. They have all of this stuff that is at your fingertips. And anyone inside the MLB quant community would be happy to set you up and do a tutorial of what this means and how it connects. Now, we've seen it happen in real time with Benetti and Stone, where Benetti's like, oh, that thing that you just said, we can measure it. This is what that means. And Stoney being like, oh, let me write that down. And now he can actually speak inside of that language. And he can find the spaces where the old and the new don't match up.
It's like Smoltz driving a car, but he doesn't believe the speedometer is real.
Right.
I don't know. I can feel it. I like to feel my speed. I just know how to drive.
Just know how to drive my Dodge.
My Dodge 170. Next up, basketball talk.
What the hell, man?
Ricky O'Donnell is going to talk some Bulls and college basketball with us as well. We'll have him handicap the Sweet 16 for us, too, next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.